The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 11th of January, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Majid Shafiq, Chief Executive Officer, and Graham Heath, Chief Financial Officer of i3 Energy. That's i3E. And they discussed their operational and funding update yesterday. Also on the podcast, James Draper, Chief Executive Officer of Bidstack, B-I-D-S, his ticker there. And James takes us through their end-of-year update, which saw them hitting their targets. Also on the podcast, Matthew Idions, Chief Executive Officer of Rose Petroleum, R-O-S-E. And Matthew explains why they've acquired additional acreage in the Paradox Basin in Utah. Plus, it's a Friday, so Russ Moulders here, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell. Russ talks about the macro environment today, also talks about gold and the following companies: Nichols, Harworth Group, and Czar. Plus, as always, I have two lists: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Majid Shafiq, Chief Executive Officer, and Graham Heath, Chief Financial Officer of i3 Energy. The ticker there is i3E. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Justin.
Now, you had a sort of quite a comprehensive update yesterday, and share price liked it a lot. So we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, as always, for people not familiar with the company, could you give us a brief summary, please?
Yes, so i3 Energy is an oil and gas company listed on the AIM market with an asset in the North Sea, which we're looking to move towards development this year. It also has lots of appraisal and exploration upside, which we're also looking to start to exploit with a drilling campaign in the summer.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about that update yesterday. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, please.
Okay. Well, there was a lot of information in that update. And so there's a few key highlights that we'd just like to mention. Firstly, very importantly, we received terms from RSR UK for offtake to the Blairholm FPSO, which sits on the adjoining field to our Liberator development. And that's something that we've been working on for a long time with RSR UK. So we're very pleased to have received indicative terms, which we're now moving towards heads of terms, hoping to get that done in the near term. We also have been working a parallel offtake solution and so have signed an MOU with a standalone FPSO provider to give us a second option there. So that's critical, obviously, to getting Liberator on development. Secondly, we signed a LOI with Dolphin Drilling to give us a firm three-well slot drilling program in the summer, which will allow us to drill a first Liberator well and an appraisal well on Liberator, and also an appraisal stroke exploration well on Serenity. Very pleased with that as well, because it's a very tight rig market and we've got access to two very good drilling rigs. So we now have certainty over the timing for that drilling program. Thirdly, I mentioned the Serenity prospect there, so that's something that we've been maturing over the last 12 months or so, and we've been very, very pleasantly surprised by what we've been seeing there. It's a very large prospect. We call it prospect, but actually really it's an appraisal opportunity, because it's a field that we think is connected to an existing discovery, the Tain discovery. And that now has been matured to drill ready status, so there's a ton of work that's been done to do that, and that's now gone into our summer drilling program. So very pleased that we're going to be drilling that. It's critical to the future development of the area. If it is as large as we think it is, then it will go into our phase two development for Greater Liberator. Mm-hmm. Fourthly, we've been progressing our debt funding options, which are now beginning to move forward in parallel with the joint venture process that we started before Christmas last year. That is progressing as expected, and Hopefully that and the debt funding will allow us to fund the program that we've got ahead of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and you expect to be, you know, A3 to be drilled in the summer of 2019 this year, of course, as part of a larger drilling campaign. So what's the resource size? Will this de-risk? And what is the potential prize, you know, with this well?
Right, so the the Liberator field itself, we believe it's very large, and we're planning to develop it in two phases. The phase one development is situated around the discovery well, and that's targeting around about 54 million barrels of stock tank oil in place, and will be developed with three wells, possibly three wells, which will recover around about 21 million barrels. So that's phase one. The A3 well then is designed to de-risk the upside in the Liberator field. We believe the Liberator field in total has around about 314 million barrels. So if you subtract the 54 that's in phase one, A3 will help to de-risk an additional 260 million barrels of stock. If it is as big as that, we may well need to, in the future, drill another appraisal well. So it will certainly de-risk a large proportion of that. Mm-hmm. If you apply the same recovery factors if you apply the recovery factors that are predicted by a simulation model, in total, phase one and phase two should deliver around about 150 million barrels of reserves.
I see. And in a, say, success case, how do you see the development of Liberator proceeding, and how many million barrels could a Liberator development produce, you say?
Right. So a success case in our mind is a successful appraisal well, obviously successful development wells on phase one, a successful A3 appraisal well, and a successful Serenity exploration stroke appraisal well. So that's the success case in our minds. And then that leads to, as I've described, the phase one development, which will be developed initially with two wells, one drilled this year, one drilled next year, and then production starts up on phase one in the middle of 2020 at production rates of around about 20,000 barrels a day. That's phase one. Phase two on a success case then becomes a joint development, essentially, of the greater Liberator area and Serenity. And in that case, Serenity itself, on conservative mapping assumptions, maps around about 197 million barrels of stock. So, again, if we get similar recovery factors that we're predicting on Greater Liberator, that's a significant resource sitting in Serenity. That will then be a joint development, and it will require a new or a dedicated large FPSO for Greater Liberator and Serenity. We're planning to develop phase two through cash flow from phase one. So because of the quality of the sands that we have in the Captain Sands in this area, phase one will generate a lot of cash flow very quickly, which will allow us to fund the phase two greater development of the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And progress is well being made on the funding front. Can you tell us the kinds of options you're considering?
Yeah, so we're running dual processes, as we've previously disclosed to the market. So the two processes that we're running, one is a joint venture process that, as Majid had said, we kicked off prior to Christmas. We've been happy so far with the amount of attraction that we've seen coming into our data room and into management presentations. There was a couple of really large North Sea processes ongoing at the back end of last year that had some parties' human resources consumed, so they couldn't, you know, dedicate resources to come in and look at the Liberator and Serenity opportunities. So they'll be coming in January, and we expect to set a bid date then during the course of February. We were also running a debt process. We are expecting the near term to come to terms and agreement on commitment levels for $100 to $130 million of senior and junior debt. Our 2019 drilling program of the three wells that Majid discussed is about $41 million US, and we expect that a material portion of that could be funded by the junior piece of the debt, circa $30 million.
I see. Excellent stuff. And what sort of timescales? You know, that's always an important thing investors think about. Should they be thinking of but any sort of farmer agreement?
Yeah, so, you know, we don't want to be too specific because there's always uncertainty in these things. But we are looking to try and get indicative terms out for the debt by the back end of this month, if possible. And then we do expect to set a bid date for the farm out process during the course of February. Whether or not that produces bids during the course of February, of course, is unknown. But we would expect any response to be soon thereafter.
Excellent stuff. And so let's say in the next year, what can investors look out for? What kind of news can they expect?
Yeah, so obviously, it's clear from the earlier questions that there's quite a lot going on at i3 at the moment. So 2019 is obviously a critical year for us, and it should conclude all of those multiple processes that we're currently in the middle of at the moment. So we would be finalizing our debt. So in the near term, finalizing the debt terms, the joint venture process coming to a conclusion, and funding being finalized for the development. Finalization of the getting to field sanction from the Oil and Gas Authority for the development. That then puts the jigsaw in place so that we can start our drilling program in the summer, which is obviously highly critical to the future of the company and is what we've been working towards over the last couple of years, and hopefully will give the exposure to our shareholders and potential future shareholders that they're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, one final thing, or three things, I should say. If someone's listening to this, guys, and likes the sound of what you're doing, the progress you're making, but are not following the story as yet, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, firstly, we're trading at a fraction of our peer group, North Sea peer group. So there's obviously an opportunity there to get in to the company when it's trading at such low levels. Secondly, we have we're moving to development starting this summer on a very economic and robust core phase one development, which will materially move the share price from where it's trading at the moment. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, in addition to that, we have two very important catalysts, drilling catalysts, that will prove the upside in our licenses in the Greater Liberator area and in Serenity. And if we have success on either one of those, that will be completely transformational to where the company's trading at the moment.
Yeah. Majid, Graham, thanks very much. And like I say, lots going on this year, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Draper, Chief Executive Officer of Bidstack. Ticker there is BIDS. James, thanks for joining me.
Absolute pleasure.
Well, do you know what? Your company's been mentioned to me quite a few times, and I've got to say, transparency, I do hold some stock. I've done a video on the company. I really like the tech. I think it's a very exciting space, and the gaming industry is massive. We know that's growing, growing at quite an impressive rate, even though it's big already. And but for people not aware, James, of Bidstack and what you do, can you summarise what you're all about, please?
Yeah, so Bidstack is an advertising technology company which basically provides dynamic, targeted, automated, native in-game advertising for the global video games industry across multiple platforms. So basically, in short, we see ourselves as a JCDecaux or Clear Channel of the virtual world. So we go and contract exclusive to ourselves multi-year deals for billboard assets that sit within video games and sell that space to advertise either direct or via their agencies. So that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, and first of all, obviously, someone has once said to me, so why, I mean, this sounds to me like an unbelievable area, because these advertising or adverts are native, and a good example of this is Football Manager, which you have a contract with, and we'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah.
But it's almost the billboards like you see in a normal football game where they now have moving adverts. So that happens in the actual game there, and that's helped by you and that your tech. And so that kind of works there. So it sounds an amazing, you know, sort of niche or area here. So first and foremost, why aren't other people, I know other people have tried to do this before, why aren't other people doing this like you are?
So when we first actually looked at moving into this, the company was set up in 2015. And originally we were in the world of real billboards, digital out of home. We made a fair amount of noise, did a fair few sort of interesting marketing activities, that one of which we sponsored Norwich City on the back of their football shirt in two seasons ago. Yeah. When we did that, we got the attention of Sports Interactive, who are the studio who created Football Manager. So we got in contact with those guys after they came to us via our website, and we started talking to them and looked at their perimeter hoardings that sat within their 3D match engine. And we actually asked ourselves the exact same question, actually, Justin. We thought there must be someone out there at the moment doing this. Started researching. There's a small little company over in Canada we came across in particular called Rapid Fire. But they're very much like an agency rather than a go-to sort of platform that is the de facto place. So we started doing a bit of research, looked back on companies, and there have been some businesses that have tried to do this. And one thing that became quite apparent, we actually spoke to a couple of the people who were involved with those companies as well. Probably the one that was most successful in terms of return for investors was a company called Massive Inc., Massive Incorporated, based over in the States. They exit to Microsoft back in 2006 for $187 million. Now those guys, I think they're just too early. They were too early. The gaming space wasn't where it is now. Back then, the interconnectivity of the broadband connection now allows, and 4G, 5G, that's definitely improved things. Competitive gaming, esports, and casual gaming, mobile gaming, it just wasn't where it is now, and it's potentially, arguably, the wrong exit for those guys. Made it to align to one. To one console manufacturer, which obviously alienated the others. So yeah. We started looking around, and I think there's like many things that seem relatively obvious, people just assume someone else is doing it. Mm-hmm. So we started talking to a bunch of other publishers back in late 2017 before signing a deal with Sports Interactive. And it became quite clear that these advertising hoardings were being sold either in-house. All the advertising you see are either in-house contra adverts, or they were coming as part of a licensing agreement. And they were all sold by one, two salespeople to set within the publisher. So it's one of those things. I think it's people assumed that others were doing it. I think it's like anything that once someone's come up with it, people start scratching their heads. But I think it's very much a case of people believe that the studios were just selling it themselves, and they weren't. And one thing I think we've been extremely heartened by is since we announced we did a deal with Sports Interactive Sega Europe, it's the amount of inbound interest we've had from game publishers, large and small, in what we're doing, which has given us huge confidence. And I have no doubt whatsoever that there will be Me Too copycats that will come along, particularly as we're now PLC. We're very visible, but it's why we're locking down the real estate on multi-year exclusive basis to protect our position and give us time to build out our offering.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I was really heartened by some of the names you've signed up, because I mean, like I said in the video I did, it was a concept, but now you've done a year-end trading update, and you've only been, let's be honest, listed 3 months, and yes. Your target was for 300,000 revenue, which is, people may say, it's not a lot for a £9 million company, but listen, I've seen AIM companies be on AIM for years and promise and never deliver any revenue. So within 3 months to deliver your £300,000 revenue is not bad. Now, people are looking for, you know, accelerated sort of revenue growth now. So take us through some of the highlights from your update, and afterwards we'll say, do you think it's, you know, that kind of growth is possible?
Yeah, I think, as you'd imagine, I've been reading some of the of people's responses to the trading update, and it's interesting. It's always a learning curve, all this sort of stuff. So we looked at what I'm extremely pleased with is that when we got this deal away, when we got the company up on AIM, we were practically pre-revenue. And we've gone from that low standpoint to north of £300,000 in 4 months with a new sales team on one asset, predominantly one franchise, Football Manager. It's been very much a collaborative arrangement with those guys, where they've been extremely helpful, and we've worked together remarkably well. And it's worth mentioning, what makes me extremely excited about it is that we are obviously the exclusive owners of that asset, and other assets that we've gobbled up, such as Dirt Rally 2, which is going to come out in February of this year. So I think for me, what makes me extremely excited is that the hard point I think was getting to that 300k number. Mm-hmm. To get past that, and to make sure now that the amount of inbound interest we've had from big brands, global brands, not just brands that want to market themselves in the UK, but international pots of cash from Asia, from Spain, and different sectors as well, from clothing brands, car manufacturers. Of course, betting brands are extremely interested in what we're doing, particularly with FM. It's been extremely heartening. There's a huge education piece in what we're doing. It's almost like the classic IBM piece of no one got fired for picking an IBM computer. It's a bit like no one with an agency got fired for sticking to AdWords and Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. So to pull media planners away from what is a very safe bet, an unexcited, very safe way of spending advertisers' cash towards something which is far more, far newer, far more exciting, an audience they don't necessarily understand yet, even given the scale of the market. The hard point was getting the initial spends away. And what we're very heartened about is that there's repeat bookings already, which is extremely exciting for us, because it just we're feeling that snowball effect now. So, yeah, extreme confidence within the team here.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I said the share price has taken a bit of a knock, and I'm thinking, I don't know if people understand why. I mean, it's a hard market at the moment anyway. I mean, let's be honest, we're coming off one of the worst quarters ever. But like I say, you're monetizing just one pretty much title, and you've got some contracts signed now with 9 games. And these are big titles, aren't they? And you're saying you're getting approximately 1 million impressions a day in Asia alone. That's quite impressive, isn't it?
It is, and it's and Asia's not even the biggest market for that one title. So it's extremely, I say, it's extremely heartening. You imagine that the FM Football Manager is still very much part of the traditional way of selling video games, as in a one upfront payment to buy this to buy their title. But as you'd imagine, there's our eye is on other markets, such as mobile gaming, free to play, where you've got install bases of 200 to 300 times that install base. Now that, in terms of impression opportunities, is enormous amounts of real estate. And I think it's one thing which we've spoken about here is that over the course of the next 12, 24 months, you know, in terms of impression numbers per day, we will be an extremely large media owner. Across any real estate would be one of the largest. So we're extremely excited by the pipeline, let's say that. Extremely excited by what's to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you explain, you mentioned there, I mean, you're obviously the middle sort of guy there in between the publishers and the suppliers and all that stuff, and the media buyers and all this stuff. So you say here that your platform is now live, end-to-end programmatic basis with PubMatic. Can you explain what they are, and you know, why is that significant?
Yeah, so they've been extremely helpful as well. Actually, it's worth putting on record. They've been extremely helpful because this is net new media. We're having to take software. So PubMatic's software, like a lot of these, in fact, all the programmatic platforms you could roll off. They're geared up predominantly for buying web and in-app. So we're having to sort of trick these systems and squidge our inventory into the current sort of drop downs, etc., to try and get it away as it is at the moment. Now, imagine that we're working with the guys at PubMatic and the guys who regulate the advertising industry to make sure that we're seen as a standardized format, but that's in a pipeline. it's the, and that makes things easier in terms of content creation. But in short, what it, Podmatic is kind of like a reseller. So it's a SSP, a supply side platform. It's almost like, imagine if you've got a big barrel with loads of inventory in it, and we've chucked our inventory into that barrel, and people reach in and grab it out based on an audience they're trying to reach out to. So it's chucking our inventory in there with the rest. It's going to be a case of someone might come and buy, I don't know, an 18 to 25 year old male playing a game in Shoreditch, London. That might be the audience profile. You don't actually care what type of media it is. It might be a banner advert on one particular website, an in-app pop-up, and it might be an advert that sits within Football Manager or another title. You don't care. All you want to do is just tick the box on that audience profile. So that's what Podmatic allows us to do. It basically allows someone to load up an audience profile, and that inventory pops up within that software and goes, buy this. So it's what I like about that is it's frictionless scalability. Mm-hmm. And let's say we're at the start of this. This will only get, famous last words, it should get easier when content is created bespoke on these open platforms for this type of inventory. Because you imagine at the moment, one thing we've got to, one thing we view ourselves as, Justin, is make sure that we're almost like custodians of the video game real estate. What we can't do, what could kill this business if we were just like, right, just chase the money and have adverts popping in left, right and center, which had click here, all this sort of thing, which clearly you would never see in a real football stadia. So we've got to be custodians of that artwork, and we do that by a dual approval process here, and it's making sure that we just get the copy, only put copy in which is going to respect that artwork. So Podmatic, yes, all the switches are turned on. We're delighted about that, and by the fact we've managed to crack it with one, we can copy and paste that for others. So that's extremely heartening. And imagine we're not sitting around and there's other people we're talking to about that as well. So it's, in terms of getting it away, in terms of the tech works end to end. So people can go and buy, as we're sat here right now, an audience profile on Podmatic and serve it into Football Manager.
So taking this, let's go back. I mean, last question before I ask you for the three reasons why someone should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list. But so going back from when you started the idea of this and you thought someone must be doing this, and then you started doing it and get some interest to where you are now, would you say, you're exceeding expectations? I mean, you said the concept has been proven. Are you quite optimistic about what's to come?
Extremely optimistic. Yeah, extremely optimistic. I'm very pleased the way in which I'm sat here now looking over at the team working away, and they're all extremely motivated. It's extremely heartening what we've managed to achieve to date in such a short period of time. I'd say one of the things that particularly excites me is the amount of inbound interest we get from advertisers, potential game publishers or developers. And actually peripheral people who would just have a severe interest in this space and may represent someone or whatever it might be. There's a huge buzz about this space at the moment. And as we are ahead of the game, as we are the exclusive media owner for a number of these assets, we're in a great place. I'm very, very, very happy with where we are today and where the roadmap goes. Imagine that we've got a clear idea where we want to get to, and I sleep well at night, so it's good.
Okay, James, I ask this of everyone coming on the podcast, but if someone's listening to this right now, likes the sound of what you're doing but are not yet following the story, give them three bullet point reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Right, so it's the market we're in, the video game market in particular. As it was announced last week in the UK, the video games market is now doing more revenue annually than the video and music industry combined, and growing away from it, and that will continue to be the case. It's the frictionless scalability of the offering we have in terms of global scalability. And also probably the final reason is the management team is extremely incentivized in terms of stock. And I'm feeling extremely extremely confident about where we are and where we're going.
Excellent stuff, James. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Matthew Iddiens, Chief Executive Officer of Rose Petroleum, R-O-S-E. Matthew, thanks for joining me again.
Hi, Justin. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. We spoke earlier in the week and some more news out today. Yeah, acquisition of additional acreage in the Paradox Basin. Before we go into that, Matthew, just summarise what Rose is all about, please.
So Rose is an AIM-listed North American oil and gas explorer, soon to be a producer. So we have a large acreage position in the Paradox Basin, which is a basin that is historical production. About 8 million barrels oil equivalent has been produced directly south of us. We have a well that is producing directly off our acreage, about 400 yards off our acreage, so we know there is movable oil very close by. And we've done a vast amount of technical work over the last few years to get to a position where we are now drill ready, permitted, ready to go, hoping to drill in the next few months.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking at this acreage there, and it looks like a bit of a steal, doesn't it? I mean, you seem to have got a good deal. Take us through, what you've got here, and then, because it looks like you've paid $35,000 for it, but
it should be worth a lot more than that. The one big advantage we had is when we shot 3D seismic over 40 square miles, which included some acreage that we didn't yet own, back in 2017, the end of 2017. And then we interpreted early 18, and then we put together a sort of buying program of the acreage that we had covered with the 3D seismic, so we knew what was there, but didn't yet acquire. And that program we did an acquisition last March, and then we did this one, obviously, in just recently. And that is now finished. The one advantage of we were planning to drill the end of last year, that was delayed. We're now on schedule now for this year. The one advantage of that, obviously, the delay is boring, but the one advantage is this acreage is probably considerably cheaper than it would have been had we drilled a successful well, because there would have been a lot more interest in it. So that is a big advantage. The price, obviously, the timing of the auction was quite good in terms of the rest of the world in chaos, with world markets collapsing, oil price rather low. So actually, there was very little interest other than us in acquiring it, which is excellent. So the timing was pretty good. And yeah, a total cost of $35,000 for nearly 2,000 acres. And the fact is, we had the seismic. We're the only people who had the seismic over that acreage, so we're the only ones who could actually see what was going on below. Gave us a huge advantage in order to know what we should be paying for it. And we got it much cheaper than we were anticipating.
It works out to be
3 cents a barrel of oil, which is
3 cents a barrel of oil. I mean, even at a very low oil price, you make good profit on that.
One would hope. I mean, obviously, you've got to get it out of the ground first, but yeah. But to buy it for that is exceptionally low and really good value. And I mean, working on we Gaffney Cline obviously did our contingent resources report back in April last year, mm-hmm. On the acreage that we owned. And for our 75% working interest in the project, we had about 12.33 million barrel of oil equivalent, 2C contingent resources over that. This, under the same sort of methodology, would represent about 1.2 million barrels of oil equivalent, which is obviously reps about 10% of that in terms of size. So if you do a sort of back of the fag packet valuation on it, Gaffney Cline gave us $122 million pre-tax value, NPV10 valuation on that resource, which would then sort of roughly equate to about a $12 million MPV of the 1.2 million.
Yeah.
If you do the, that's obviously not totally scientific in terms, but it gives you a rough guidance of what we reckon it would be worth.
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks like a good deal. I mean, you certainly didn't overpay here.
No, we certainly didn't. And that sort of completes our acquisition round really now, and our total focus is on getting the funding to drill the well and getting a farming partner stroke financing partner for the drilling program.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, like I said, that's the major milestone coming up. So for people listening now who are not following the story as yet, but are reading this and quite like the sound of it, give them, you know, three quick reasons, Matthew, why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
So we're operating in the US with great infrastructure. We have a large acreage package, about 80,000 acres. We've got a decent size resource on about 20% of that, which we've shot 3D seismic on. So it's only a portion that we've actually sort of semi-fully tested, really. And that those 2C resources are 12.33 million barrels of oil equivalent. We have technically de-risked this as far as we can. We've shot the 3D seismic. We've had Gaffney Klein & Associate and Schlumberger both do reports on the hydrocarbons there, and also the fracture networks, because it is a fracture play. We don't frack. We do horizontal drilling into the fractures that we identify through the 3D seismic. That is the way it's done. So there's significant upside there. We should be drilling soon, which would make us a producing company, and the uplift in our shares should be really quite significant based on from where we are to the potential value of the NPV of $122 million pre-tax compared to where our market cap is at the moment. There's obviously a big arbitrage there.
Yeah, absolutely. Matthew, good to chat to you, and like I say, very busy first half of the year, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you? Happy New Year to you. We haven't spoken
yet
this year,
have we? I don't know if we know yet.
I had a family bereavement thing to go to last week. So, Happy New Year to you, and may it be a successful and prosperous one.
Well, do you know what? My thought is this. I just think that little sort of sell-off we had, it wasn't little, it was quite big historically.
It was quite roomy, I think.
But I think that's just a little bit of a foresight of what's to come. I do think we're in a bit of a bear market. I think we'll have a nice, because as you know, bear market rallies can be quite strong and powerful, and they can last for months.
Very wise words. Yeah, very good. And actually what you find statistically is there are more up days in bear markets than down days.
Yep.
It's just the down days happen to be more brutal. And it's that old market saying, stock markets climb escalators and go down in elevators. And I think that's, I think this, I think when you look at, you can look at the VIX index, mm-hmm. and there's a FTSE VIX and there's a VIX in the, and you can follow them for free on Yahoo and online. You don't have to pay fortunes for this, and if you look right now, I mean the American VIX got to about 35 just on Christmas Eve when things took a real hammering, and certainly once it gets near 40, that's generally a contrarian indicator that markets have got oversold in the short term and have got panicky. Now don't forget the VIX got to 80 after Lehman Brothers went down, but it got down to about 6, 7, 8 when everything seems to be jogging along in late 2017, early 2018. So that is a bit of a contrarian indicator. Right now, it's basically bang on its long-term average of 20. So I think the rally's had a good run, but now I think we'll be looking for fresh direction one way or the other. Yes.
Yeah.
And my fear is it's going to be a trickier year because, we know the US Federal Reserve, although they seem to be backtracking slightly on two or three interest rate increases this year. Even yesterday, Chair Fed Powell said that they're going to keep on with quantitative tightening. That is taking away some of the fund money that people have been using that's been helping to inflate all asset prices. And with US Treasury yields at 2.6%, 2.7%, the argument that there is no alternative to equities or TINA isn't as strong as it was, because people can get a little bit of return now on, say, US Treasury, for example. And I think that has also been a factor in the loss of momentum and even the pullback we've seen in US and therefore global stocks.
Yeah. Well, I've had a couple of people say to me, I've been tweeting out some economic indicators, saying to me, where's the bullish you've gone? And I said, well, I'm only tweeting out what I'm seeing. I'm not making up these stats. Even just now, UK economic growth hit 6 months low. You know, that's just come out now. And I'm thinking, well, I'm just tweeting out what's there. I'm not making up bearish statements. Nope. If I'm bullish, I'm bullish. If I'm not, that's the way.
And, I mean, it's tricky. Nobody liked, it's funny, you know, when I was on the sell side in an investment bank, nobody liked you being bearish. Because if you were right, you didn't get thanked. If you're wrong, you look like an absolute plonker. And in fact, if you were right, you probably got blamed, which is, you know, is obviously what you're slightly encountering. I mean, we do have to be careful. I mean, if anything, you know, we've always got to remember the old saying, you can have cheap stocks and good news, just not both at the same time.
So
I think the fact that at the moment we're struggling for good news, you could almost view as a bit of a positive, quite frankly. And, you know, if you look at the poor old UK stock market, it's basically where it was back in 1999, if you're looking at the FTSE 100 when it peaked at 69.30. And it's been a serial underperformer, and please, listeners, this is not a political statement. It has been a serial underperformer since the EU referendum vote in June 2016. You can argue it's cheap earnings, you can argue it's cheap on yield, you can argue it's unloved. You've been seeing big fund outflows. So if you are looking for somewhere where there is lots of bad news and therefore potentially cheap stocks, it's probably here in the UK, intriguingly. But if the US stock market keeps going, you know, starts going down again, it's probably going to be pretty tough for the UK to go up a lot, even if it may not go down anywhere near as much.
Yeah. Okay, so let's...
Potentially.
Well, do you know what? I was just thinking, you are right about bad news. If I tweet something out that's bullish, that can be highly inaccurate, it'll get lots of likes and retweets. If I tweet something that's accurate, that's bearish, I get no likes and retweets. It's ridiculous. So you can see why people do tweet out bullish stuff rather than bearish stuff.
That's one of the most difficult things about investing, is that we all look for confirmation bias. Oh, I think this. Nobody likes reading things that make you think you've got it wrong. Even if it's just the share price. And it's one of the hardest things to do as an investor, is to say to yourself, actually, I haven't got this right. Soros, I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but he actually makes a point of generally only reading things that disagree with what he thinks rather than what he does agree with, or then do agree with him, to challenge his thought process. And it's really unpleasant to do, and it's really hard to do, but it's a terrific discipline if you can do it, because there are lots of smart people out there and they may have just seen something that, frankly, you haven't.
True. Well, let's look at, do you know what? I know just before we came on here, you've been mentioning gold. And I have been actively looking around for some gold stocks of late. And because I just think, okay, I may be getting early, but I'm happy to have some gold exposure. So what have you been writing about gold? What's that mean?
Well, I think, funny enough, one of the reasons I wanted to write about gold was that I haven't had a question about it for absolutely months. And again, you know, so therefore you're automatically going against the flow because people aren't talking about it. A year ago, everybody was talking about Bitcoin. That didn't work out so well. The moment, nobody's talking about gold. And if you look, you can follow it on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange website. The numbers are a bit fiddly to get out, but you can see that gold speculative positions in futures markets are still at very, very low levels. And if anything, shorts are quite near high levels. So there's not a lot of positive sentiment towards gold. It might not change a lot to change sentiment. And while we've been having this sell-off, S&P 500 down 12%, gold is up 7%. Yeah. So that in itself is quite interesting. So gold at the moment is serving its purpose of being a bit of a port in a storm. Now, if the US Federal Reserve keeps on to its path of raising interest rates, you know, maybe people will, you know, won't even need to think about gold, because again, it just doesn't generate any yield, and there'll be better yields on cash, and frankly, you can use that as your port in a storm. But I think what's interesting is that gold has begun to pick up a little bit of steam when the markets have pushed back on the Fed and said, you're taking away our fund money, we don't like it. And the Fed's gone, we need to think about this because the economic data is a little bit softer and we don't want to push too hard too fast. Now, there's even on the CME FedWatch page, you can look at what the market's discounting. There's almost as much chance now, according to the market, of a Fed rate cut this year as there is of a Fed rate increase. Now, if the US Federal Reserve starts cutting rates again, or God forbid even feels a need to go back to quantitative easing, under that scenario, central bank recant potential loss of faith in tightening, that's the environment when you would expect gold bugs to start puffing their chests out again. Now, whether they'll be right or not, we'll find out. But if there's any whiff of the Fed really reaching for the big red button of QE again. And Powell has said to just yesterday, QT is the only game in town right now, despite the softer language and interest rates. That would be a huge boost for gold. And I think, you know, as an outlier scenario, if the economy gets really tough, if the S&P 500 goes down a long way, I can see the central bank coming under pressure to go back to QE. And that's when I would expect gold to potentially come into its own.
Yeah. So
it's a long way off yet. I mean, the Fed's still looking to raise rates and to shrink its balance sheet. But as an outlier, you know, in the end, as Mark Twain once said, it's not what you don't know that kills you. It's what you know for certain that isn't so that does all the damage. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, you know, we're all pretty convinced that the economy is okay and that the Fed's going to continue to tighten rates. So if you would go for the opposite scenario, which is what we, you know, then the economy rolls over and the Fed panics, that's when gold will really come into its own.
If history's
any guide, I should say.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, let's look at some stocks, Russ. What are you looking at?
Nickel, all three that we've looked at before, Nichols, yeah. Harworth and Czar. And I would say that we've looked at them with varying degrees of success, probably.
Right. Nichols, what's happening there?
Vimto, Sunkist, Levi Roots, Soft Drinks. Now, we first looked at this stock at about £15 odd, when just after it had a profit warning, again implying the old good news, cheap stocks type thing. And the reason for the profit warning was that their business in the Yemen and the Middle East had softened for obviously understandable reasons. And also people were getting very worried about the sugar tax and what it would mean. Now, they readily adapted to the sugar tax. They were way ahead of the curve there. But the shares have struggled, frankly. And I know that when we first talked about it, you said you didn't like the look of the chart at all. And so I doffed my cap to you. There's a full year trading statement come out, which looks fine. Sales up 7%. UK up 13%, international business down 12%, and the bulk of that is Yemen again. Africa's improved in the second half, and that full year profits will be, quote, at least in line with guidance. And at the interims, they said they will be in line. So maybe, just maybe, we're coming out of this profit wobble that they've had, and certainly that's given the shares a bit of a lift. They're back to basically where we started, and they're now bumping up against resistance at 1550. And I defer to your technical expertise, but it looks to me like they might have actually broken a sequence of lower highs.
Yeah, well, do you know what? The reason why I didn't like it is because they were trading below that 200-day moving average. And what they've done here, they've gapped up above that, which is not only that they're above that, but they've gapped up above it, which is very bullish sentiment. So if they stay above this, it's obviously going to be a change in trend here, from a downtrend to an uptrend. So there we go.
It's interesting. The one problem with it is you've got a stock that's probably growing at 4% to 5% trend, and you're paying 19 to 20 times earnings for it. So we've probably paid slightly the wrong price for the security and relative safety that it offers, but it's got a net cash balance sheet, margins in the 20%, high returns on capital. Again, if there is going to be choppy waters, this is one of the ports that you might look to be hiding in.
Yeah, cool. Okay, NICL, what's next, Russ?
Yeah, Harworth, which is a FTSE small cap company, HWG, Rotherham-based. It's a property land regenerator and land developer. The CEO puts it very bluntly that they're into beds and sheds in the North and Midlands of England, 136 sites, over 21,000 acres. It's actually the ex-property arm of UK Coal. And it's just come out again with a nice trading statement ahead of expectations on active portfolio management, strong lettings. So net asset value is going to grow by around 12% in the year to December 2018. That will take you to an NAV per share of around 141-142p. The shares are trading at a 17% discount to that. I think that's pretty respectable value. Gives you a bit of downside protection. I'll wait now for the full year numbers on the 5th of March. But that's HWG from Rotherham, 300-odd million market cap per property regenerator. And again, we all know the UK is looking for sites where it can build affordable homes, and Harworth's in the vanguard there, potentially.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. HWG. Yeah, just, and again, do you know what? Just bounce up towards that 200-day moving average. It's still under it a little bit, which is a bit bearish, but if you can get above that, that's good. Marvellous stuff. What's our last one?
And the last one is Czar. X-A-A-R, and it's X-A-R on the ticker, Cambridgeshire. And this is a turnaround story where we've been way too early. We went looking for trouble with this one. And we found it with knobs on. I mean, the shares have halved since we first looked at it. And very few companies slipped out a profit warning between Christmas and New Year, and blow me, this was one of them. And that was the third profit warning of the year. Again, their next generation business is developing for their new printheads and new digital printing technologies, but it's developing more slowly than expected. And the legacy ceramics business is going down very quickly still. So they're now talking about H2 sales for last year being not much better than H1. That means they're going to make a loss for this year. Analysts have actually penciled in a loss for 2019 as well. The firm is talking about looking at all strategic options, and it's got a net cash balance sheet. So the great thing is the clock's not ticking. It's got 37 million of net cash in the balance sheet. So even losing a couple of million quid a year, it ain't going to go bust, ladies and gentlemen. Certainly not for it. It's going to take it a long time, while things are going to have to get a hell of a lot worse for there even to be any trouble at all. So in that respect, having got it wrong, we can wait, because we've seen these print these product cycles before. When they turn big. And this is a company that's losing money now, but 3 or 4 years ago was making more than £20 million a year. And for a market cap of 120 million quid, if it ever gets anywhere near there again, cheap stock. So got it wrong, but don't have to panic out, because the balance sheet will buy us some time.
Yeah, but you know what? There's one thing you should always know about turnarounds. They always take longer than you think, don't they?
Thank you, but yes.
I've jumped in many a stock.
I got in after the first profit warning when I should have known that, you know, these things come in threes like buses, right?
Yeah, but in real life, you know, I've actually done this a couple of times, jumped in and thinking, oh, turn around, and it's usually a couple of, exactly, two or three times, it takes ages, because they pre-announce one, then the figures come out again, and you say, oh, yeah, just confirming, and they say, oh, there's a couple of delays, turn this thing around, and so it always takes longer than you think. It's almost like it takes a good year sometimes, you know. The bigger the company, the longer it takes, but,
What was interesting, after the warning, the stock initially dipped, and then actually bounced back quite strong to finish up where it started after the warning, so maybe, just maybe, we're three and out on the profit warnings, but we'll find out.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff. Thanks for that, Russ. Have a nice weekend.
Yeah, great to talk to you again.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Rose Petroleum, ROSC. Of course, Matthew was just on the podcast. At four, Anglo African Oil and Gas, AAOG. At three, Red Emperor Resources, that's RMP. At two, Flybe. Now, Flybe is down after that offer of a penny per share. They're down 80% today. People are hitting the follow button there. Number one, most followed company, an amazing RNS out yesterday. Angle is the company, AGL is the ticker. And they had this late last night, and a couple of people on Twitter jumped onto it very quickly, actually. And do you know what? The RNS came via notification via Vox. That was the first people that saw it and shared it. I think Spud the Plumber mentioned it and shared it. He was walking the dog. He said, is this any good? But it was in capital letters. Breakthrough cancer research using Parsortix, which is one of their devices, or some of their systems, I suppose. And it's shot up, literally, about 65%. It's down today, but do you know what? I bought a tiny little chunk of AGL, because I just think it's an amazing breakthrough, and it's very volatile. I try to avoid the spike. It's down 21%, and I bought that. It was up 65% yesterday, and I bought it just a tiny bit, and I will be doing further reading on that, because I've heard of this company before a long time ago. Lots of good things coming through this company, and so I've taken, I put a little toe into it and see what's going to happen, and if I like it and it pans out, of course, I will scale in further. But as yet, go small. If you go small at the start, of course, and it goes wrong, you'll only lose small. Go big, you can lose big. All right, but there's always more time to scale in. Always. Okay, let's go for the top five most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours. They were as follows. At five, Zenith Energy. Successful listing of corporate notes. At four, formal agreement reached for the sale of a non-core Mopoco gold project. That's Armadale Capital. At three, Valrix. Publication. Oh, no, hang on. Who's that from? Yeah, it was from Armadale Capital. Yeah, sorry. At three, Valrix, publication of Val 401 peer-reviewed article. At two, Georgian Mining, exploration permit update. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Bidstack Group, year-end trading update. And of course, James was on the podcast. Very exciting technology. And I think people saw that revenue figure. Listen, they've only been listed for 4 months, okay? Most AIM companies don't achieve any revenue at all for years. And so they're listed. They achieved £300,000 revenue within the first three months. Let's be honest. They signed up with Football Manager in November, so it's, you know, it's excellent. Next year's revenue figures are closer to £6 million. And if you listen to James, I think he's very confident hitting that as well. But I think it was the first 3 months was the hardest to get things up and rolling there, you know, while they could. But BIDS, I hold stock. I like them a lot. I like the tech, I like the market. I've done a video on them. But do some research. You know, they've fallen down 7% on that update, which I think is ridiculous. They've hit so many milestones and done so well in 3 months. But there we go. BIDS. I can see why they're so low. People see that figure, 300K, and think, is that all? What? They've only just started trading. Anyway, check them out. BIDS, year-end trading update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.